Okay. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Monday, February 23rd, 2015. I'm opening a meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. And because, oh, we do have quorum now. Awesome. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 5036 related to the Secretary of State's office. Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and Subcommittee members. Today you begin three days of scheduled public hearings on the budget bill for the Secretary of State. I would just like to point out a couple of logistical things for you to note. Please note that in OLIS, under today's meeting date, there are a number of items that you will probably want to be referring to for the next few days. These include the Secretary of State's presentation that is being projected on the screen, as well as an appendix with other requested information that they will not generally be projecting on the screen, but that they've been asked to submit and have done so. There's also an item there called the HB 5036 LFO presentation. This is the standard document that we're preparing that looks like this for all agencies. Just to note a few things about this particular agency budget. The Secretary of State, first of all, as a constitutionally established office, given that status, the governor does not make a recommendation on their budget requests. As a result, you will not find a governor's recommended budget binder or materials. The materials will be identified as the agency request budget, but that's fine. You're not missing anything. We've just forwarded on to you the request that came from the Secretary of State's for their budget for this upcoming biennium. The Secretary of State's office operates four major program divisions, the Elections Division, the Audits Division, the Archives Division, and the Corporation Division. They will be beginning today. There's also a fifth division that serves as a support for the other four and also houses the Executive Office of the Secretary of State. That fifth division is called the Administrative Services Division. One of the entities or organizations within the Administrative Services Division is the Information Services Section, the IS section, of which you'll be hearing a lot today. I would like to point out that this agency receives support from both general fund and has significant other funds and some federal funds in its budget. The Elections Division operates with general fund plus federal funds from the Help America Vote Act. These federal funds were received in the past, and we are not anticipating receiving any more from the federal government, though these funds remain and are being spent down. The Audits Division is an other funds division, and its source of funding are assessments and state government service charges to other state agencies. As such, it's very similar to the DAS budget that you just reviewed in that general fund is provided to general fund agencies to fund their portion of Audits Division assessments, and other funds agencies use their other funds to pay for that. The Archives Division, similarly, operates on an other funds basis and has state government service charge assessments to other agencies, and also has a small amount of federal grant funding in its budget. The Corporation Division is a little different from the others in that it is an other funds supported division. However, there are no state government service charges to other state agencies. Instead, there are particular fees that are charged. The primary source of funding is the corporate registration fee, which is the rates of that fee are established not by the Secretary of State, but are established in law by the legislature. And the corporate registration fees do support the costs of operating the Corporation Division, but the rates as established by the legislature are at levels so that most of the money that's generated, three-fourths or more of it, is actually transferred and becomes a general fund revenue source. Finally, the Administrative Services Division receives funding through transfers of and assessments on the other four program divisions, plus some general fund support directly. The general fund support primarily is to support the costs of the Executive Office of the Secretary of State, plus there's some residual funding for costs that would otherwise be assessed to the Archives Division. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Just very quick, Madam Co-Chair.
Certainly.
Steve, I apologize, I missed it. You talked about that on one of these that you were mentioning, that those remaining funds transfer to the general fund. Can you tell me which one that was again?
That's the corporation division.
Thank you.
They have more than one revenue source. Their primary revenue source, though, is the corporate registration fee that corporations, both profit and for-profit and non-profit, are required to pay on an annual basis. The other item, as a housekeeping measure, I did want to point out that there is. You had some questions for DAS at your meeting on the 18th last week. They have provided responses to your questions, and those can be found posted in OLIS under the February 18th meeting date if you would like to look at that.
Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Taylor, the floor is yours.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Smith, and members of the committee, thank you for having us here today to talk about our agency budget. Before we get too far into this,
can I just remind you need to introduce yourself for the record? Thank you so much.
Thank you. My name is Robert Taylor. I'm the Deputy Secretary of State.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
And I'll introduce Mr. Chris Mullen. He's our Information Systems Director, and you'll be hearing about his good work for our agency a little bit later. Before I get too far into this, I wanted to first thank Mr. Bender. We have worked with him extensively over the past few months to help develop this budget. He has given us good feedback, and we have responded to that, and it's been a good working relationship. And I want to thank him for that. So this is our Secretary of State 2015-17 budget presentation. On the next slide, you'll see that we've tried to organize this presentation around innovation and security. And our agency has worked very hard to identify the right balance between innovation and security, and you'll see how we are trying to implement that balance in our budget request going forward. What I'll do today is give an agency overview, and then over the next 3 days, today, tomorrow, and on Wednesday, you'll hear from each of our agency directors. And you'll get to meet them, hear about the good work they're doing to manage our agency. And they're going to focus on the strategic initiatives, their core business functions, and talk about their key performance measures. The next slide shows the information that we have in the appendix that Mr. Bender went over. I'll draw particular attention to Attachment G today. That's a document that Mr. Mullen, our IT director, prepared in response to some questions that Mr. Bender asked about Package 100. And we'll be talking about Package 100. Those are positions to help us strike the right balance between innovation and security. The next slide talks about the general overview of the Secretary of State's agency, and Mr. Bender mentioned this. The Secretary of State is Oregon's Chief Elections Officer, the Auditor of Public Funds, the first stop for Oregon businesses, and the keeper of our shared history. So those are the four main tasks around which our divisions are built. The next slide talks about
Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Senator Johnson.
Highly nuanced, but I think worthy of noting for the record, our shared written history. You may recall that many years ago, almost 100 years ago, the legislature cut a deal with the Oregon Historical Society to be the repository of our tangible treasures. It was a shared financial burden, a promise that we have reneged on the legislative side. But I just wanted to make that largely reneged on.
That is, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Senator Johnson, that is a very good point. That's a very, very good point. And just this last weekend, I had an opportunity to visit with the director of the Historical Society, Carrie Timchuk, at the Historical Society Vault in Gresham. And if any of you have not been there, you should go and see it. It is a really special place because that's where they store all of the memorabilia that's not otherwise on display at the museum. So it's a great opportunity to see that. And Senator Johnson is correct that the archives holds all of the important government documents going back to even before statehood, the most famous of which is our Constitution. But the Historical Society has a big, big role to play, and I think the legislature should, wherever possible, help contribute to that legacy that the Historical Society has. So.
Thank you.
The next slide talks about our strategic initiatives. So while we have four business divisions that are very diverse in their mission, being the elections, audits, corporations, and archives, that's a diverse group of divisions. But the common threads that help bind them together are our effort to engage Oregonians, innovate for the future, and deliver effective results. That's something that the then Secretary of State, now Governor Brown, really stressed within our agency to help try to bring all of the diverse agencies together around a common mission. And I'm really proud to say that each division has really taken that to heart, and you'll get to hear from them over the next 3 days of how they're each doing that. The next slide breaks this out so you can really see how we are structured internally. And Mr. Bender made this point earlier, where on the right side of that slide you see our four business divisions, elections, corporation, audit, and archives. We describe what their primary functions are, and then you can see the FTEs that are devoted to those divisions. And you can see that Archives has 22 FTE, Audit 73, that's the biggest FTE division in our agency. Corporation has 35, and then Elections just has 21. So of the four, it's one of the smaller divisions, although of course it carries out one of the most fundamental functions of our democracy. So that's something to keep in mind as we talk about the budget over the next couple of days. And then on the
excuse me, Mr. Taylor, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we talk about each one of these budgets in the coming days, will there be more specific information about how FTE are allocated among the different types of functions? For example, under audits, there are municipal audits. So would that be the majority of the positions or just a few? You'll have that specific information later.
Yes, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Representative Nathanson. Yes, we will break that information out as we go through this. I know Mr. Blackmer, our audits director, has a slide talking about how his division, how their resources are split among their performance auditors versus financial auditors versus IT auditors, and the other directors in the back will be, I'm sure, taking notes and getting you that information over the next couple of days.
Thank you.
So on the other point that Mr. Bender made earlier, and it's worth emphasizing, is on the left side of that slide, that's our administrative services division. And within that division are really three separate divisions. Our business services division, that's run by Jeff Morgan. He's helped us prepare the budget. He helps do our procurement and our contracting. That's what that division does. Then we have our information systems division. That's Mr. Mullen. He does all of the IT software, hardware work for the entire agency. So while his budget and his FTEs are housed within administrative services, they really serve the missions of the big four business agencies.
Mr. Taylor?
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt. The past couple of weeks, we've been working with the folks from DAS, and they've been in front of us for the first two full weeks of this committee. And one of the questions that came up on a regular basis was with regard to their services division, where they provide services to other state agencies. Now, obviously, it's a constitutional officer's bailiwick. It's marginally different. But in essence, your office is about the same size as a small to medium agency, and really on the smaller side compared to some of them. And I'm a little curious, and I don't expect you to answer this on the spot, about the decisions that have been made historically to insource, if you will, HR and some of those business services and things like that when those are available from DAS, and whether there's been a recent cost-benefit analysis about whether keeping those in the Secretary of State's office rather than contracting with DAS for some of those, if they're not super specialized, is the right economic decision and the most effective way to do it. So you may not well not be able to answer that off the top of your head.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, that's a good question, and I think there are two general principle type responses to that. The first is we're always looking for ways to be more efficient and more effective, and if that means contracting with DAS for services or an outside vendor for services, I think would always entertain that. One of the challenges, however, with being a separate constitutional officer, being separately accountable to the public for the decisions we do and we make, oftentimes there's a concern of if you cede some of your operational authority to another either branch or another part of the executive branch, then you lose some of that accountability within the Secretary of State's office. So that has been something that we have really struggled with, because we know we will get measured and we will be held accountable to the public for what we do, which means we want to be darn sure we know what we're doing and have control over it.
Okay. I recognize that your office is obviously in something of a transitional phase at the moment, and this may not be the right year to have this conversation, but I think, I don't know how my co-chair feels, but I think I might value a conversation offline with you at some point in the next few weeks, just to think about this a little bit more and understand where you see the trade-offs coming. So
that I would welcome that conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
So back to the slide on our organizational chart. So you'll see our information systems is housed under administrative services. Mr. Mullen later on has got a slide where we attempt to break out his 39 FTEs and spread them across the business divisions, so you can see how his FTEs are used to support the different divisions. And then we also have a POP 100 where we're asking for additional information technology support. And in that same slide that Mr. Mullen will show you, he shows you how those additional FTEs get spread out across the divisions. So look for that slide. It's one that I think can really help the committee understand where it's putting these resources. And the other thing that I think it helps communicate is if Archives was just a separate agency out there, it would have to have IT support associated with it. And if Elections was just a separate agency out in government, it would have to have IT support out there. And so what we're trying to do is show how each of those different divisions have resources associated with them. And it's not just 39 people working for Mr. Mullen. It's different people spread out across the divisions.
So I'm going to come across sounding like I'm trying to be mean, and I'm not. But looking at the number of people you've got, and this is an honest to God, I'm not trying to play gotcha question. I have no idea what best practices are in the business world about the proportion of IS people to the rest of your organization. And if I'm doing my arithmetic correctly, right now you're at about 1 to 5. Right, for your total FTE, and then your IS FTE. And if you get the additional, I think, 10 that you've asked for in POP 100, and there are a few more people, it would probably be a lot lower, right? 1 to 4, something like that. And I'd be very interested as we go along, Mr. Mullen, to hear a little bit more about, I mean, your point is well taken, Mr. Taylor, that if they were separate agencies, they'd need their own IT people. But again, it's something I'd like to think about a little bit. Not that I don't value the work that they're doing by any means, but I just don't know what best practices are in this regard and whether, you know, how to figure out how to do this. And it maybe that's the work that you're doing is so subspecialized that it doesn't make sense and you really need that level. And if that's true, that's fine. But I just want to be a thoughtful steward of our taxpayers' dollars here. So thank you.
That point is well taken. Co-Chair Steiner Hayward and Mr. Mullen will address best practices and where we might fit into that. There are a couple of things I think you will see as we go through this presentation. And I don't want to steal his thunder, but Mr. Threlkell will come up here and talk a little bit later about the number of registrations, business registrations that we have online now, mm-hmm. and the number of UCC filings that we have online now.
Can I just remind you that we try to avoid abbreviations unless we've explained them?
Oh, UCC, Uniform Commercial Code.
Thank you.
That they're filings that...
Just for the folks listening at home, if there are any.
Yep,
Thank you very much.
The one acronym I knew.
But we also have three out of the eight of us haven't been on this committee. Have you ever been on this committee? Ever.
No.
And two of them are brand new to the legislature, so we also try to support our newer members, so thank you.
So, for example, in our corporation division, it used to be that all of these business filings were done in paper. And over the years, of course, there's been more customer demand to do that online. And what you'll see when Mr. Threlkell gives his presentation is, for the first time this past year, over half of the business registry filings are now online. We've kind of reached that tipping point. And a similar tipping point has been reached with the UCC filings, with more than half of those being online. And the other thing you'll see is when we used to be more paper-based, we had more FTEs devoted towards the corporation division, clerks handling the paper. So that's gone down. But the IT infrastructure, the need for the people to make the resources available online, has gone up. So in some ways, it's a trade. And there's a similar thing going on with auditors,
sure.
where the number of auditors has gone down, as you don't have to do so much paper calculations. But it's offset by the need for new technology staff. So that's part of the trade-off that's happening.
Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm doing my best James Earl Jones to deal here.
And a fine job you're doing of it too, Senator.
But somewhere in your presentation, I would hope that you would point out the particular to the folks that haven't been on this committee before, how much money is raised by the business and corporate division that goes back to the general fund.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Senator Whitsitt, that is an item that we have to talk about.
Great.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And then the final piece of that is our human resources division, and we have a little under three FTEs associated with that, and those folks do all of the HR work for the entire agency, and they do a very, very good job of that. The next slide talks about shows our 15-17 agency requested budget, compares it to our 13-15 legislatively approved budget, and then shows the changes in those numbers if all of the policy option packages and everything else is approved.
Oh, yes.
We recognize the size of the ask. And what I have asked all of our directors to do in preparing this budget over the last several months and in preparing for this presentation today, I've told them our job is to tell the legislature what we need to be successful. Tell them what we need to be successful, and it's up to them to make the hard decisions and balance those priorities against what other agencies need. That's our job, so that we're coming here in that spirit. Yes.
Senator Johnson.
I guess I'm glad that you said that you're coming in that spirit, because what you implied was that if we don't give you the money, you're not successful, and therefore it's not our fault. I mean, that's what I heard you say. It's a huge ask, and there are a lot of moving pieces in this budget, and I just don't want to leave the impression that legislative failure to fund you at 100% might lead to you not being able to discharge your mission. I think some of what we look for is an agency's ability to either curtail mission, retreat to core competencies, do something just as though the economy had cratered and we were looking at a $500 million drop in revenue. Part of it is your ability to manage to whatever resources you've got.
Co-Chair Steiner here with Senator Johnson. You're right about that. I mean, part of what we have to do as an agency is manage within the resources budgeted by the legislature. Absolutely. Part of what we need to do as an agency in the budgeting process is explain to the committee the resources we think we need and the risks associated with not getting those resources. It's really, for me, it's a risk analysis, and we owe it to our agency and to the legislature to talk about what those are. And there's risks of not funding corrections. There's risks of not funding education. There's risks of not funding a lot of different other agencies, and there's a risk of not fully funding our agency too. But these are the hard decisions that get made in this building every day, and I know that you'll make the best decision you can. The next slide, the next two slides are key performance measures. I won't go through these in detail right now, but we wanted to flag these for you as you'll be seeing them again in the division director's presentation. And there'll be plenty of information about these, so
Madam Chair,
look for those.
Senator Johnson.
Just to follow on what you said and alert the division managers, the audit cost savings is something that is of interest to me. I think that the Secretary of State's office has done a good job on audits. I know that there are frequently management letters that accompany those audits. What I'm interested in is both the demonstrated dollar amount of revenue that has been saved by the Secretary of State's crisp audits asking for improvements, but also I am interested in knowing what's the enforcement mechanism tracking those management letters. I know, for example, for the benefit, well, I don't need to tell Representative Taylor she did this, but an agency gets an audit, and there's an opportunity for the agency to rebut. Then there's a period of negotiation. I felt as though sometimes that's righteous. At other times, it's like having the agency touch up their own x-rays. And
I love that analogy, Senator.
It's medicinal to suck up to you. I have two questions. One, gross savings, and secondly, what is the enforcement mechanics that accompany audits, especially audits that have had a critical finding?
Co-Chair Steiner here with Senator Johnson. That's a great question. I know Gary Blackmer is here.
He's smiling, so director.
So he will be sure to address that during his presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next slide talks about our notable improvements for the past biennium. And then the slide following will talk about the major challenges we have coming up in 15-17. So for the past biennium, in our administrative services division, the biggest improvement we have made is emphasizing the correct balance between innovation and security through all of our applications. Mr. Mullen is going to talk to you about the challenges we face in 2015 and beyond as far as the internet and security and all those things. And I think this past year, given all that we've been through, we have really emphasized finding the right balance between innovation and security. For the archives division, you know, this is one of those things that is for some people outside the building, it's not very exciting. But if you are the state archivist, it is a very big deal. And this is the phase one compact shelving. It's a shelving system that was installed that expands and contracts to give you more bang for your buck shelving-wise. It's a great system. It's a great idea. Mary Beth has successfully implemented that this past biennium, and she has shown it to me. It really is impressive. And she's also going to have an open house later so folks can go and see it themselves. The corporation division, this is something that's very exciting, and again, in keeping with our effort to try to meet the customer's demand for being served online. And this is our Oregon Business Registry upgrade. This is a successful project that we rolled out in the last couple of months, and it's a refresh of our business registry system. And I was just down in Springfield the other day talking to a group, and somebody came out of the blue and said, "Hey, I've noticed the good work that you have done with your Oregon Business Registry. Please bring that back and pass it on to your people." So Peter and Chris, I'm passing that on right now. You did a good job on that. And people notice that, and they're happy about that. So that's a good success story for our agency.
Excuse me, Senator Johnson. Mr. Taylor, I can't help but think, as I'm reading your first bullet, emphasizing the correct balance between innovation and security throughout all applications, I'm wondering how or what is the prophylactic to stay true to this standard when you're dealing with other agencies that you can't control? I keep going back to the notion of the increasingly sophisticated hacker world out there that is now able to get into NORAD and I don't know what the acronym means. All of these other very sophisticated systems. And I keep thinking about the motor voter bill that I believe is going to pass and that the new governor is eager to sign into law. And I'm trying to figure out, given that that's part your function and part DMV's function, how do you assure yourself that DMV is up to the standards that you have set in the Secretary of State's office for data protection?
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Senator Johnson, thank you for that. Thank you for that question. And Mr. Mullen is going to go over this a little bit in his presentation. And part of what we are dealing with now is it's a big, scary world out there. It really is. And Mr. Mullen will talk about that. There are people out there that will try to hack into systems and try to do bad things. Our agency went through that in February. And so I don't think any agency in state government that doesn't feel that as viscerally as we do and take it to heart. But at the same time, and you'll see this in the slides too that's reflected, the internet's not going away. And even more and more people are demanding, customers, citizens are demanding to be served online. And as a government, you have to meet that demand, or else you will not be serving those citizens. And that is the real balance we're trying to strike, is meet that demand for services online while being as secure as possible. And in that vein, that's where, and Mr. Mullen will talk about this, but that's why we asked him, what do we have to do so that we don't experience something like we did in February again? And Senator, go ahead.
Please. Well, and it's not just meet the demand, but it's also to prevent against the unintended consequences. I've been giving considerable thought to this. Let's say that you have someone who is receiving, and I may be wrong in some of my assumptions, and I beg correction, but someone who is receiving benefits from the state, so they have to demonstrate a physical address. They're gone. They're off visiting grandma someplace. They are automatically registered to vote. And as a result, now the physical address becomes a matter of public record. If domestic violence is involved somehow, how can you protect against, in your desire to serve citizens, and I get that, how do you inoculate against the unintended consequences of somebody where the internet service becomes exactly the undoing of their security and safety?
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Senator Johnson, on the question of domestic violence victims, for example, people in that situation, there are protections in place for them now. Those protections would remain in place under new motor voter. That information would not be transferred to us under the new motor voter law. So, but the bigger point I think that you're making is we've got a project to help register more citizens and put a ballot in the hand of every eligible voter. How can you be confident that we're going to do it in a way that's not going to compromise those people? And that's a fair question. And that's something that has been brought up in the committees, and it's something that's been brought up on the House floor, and it's something that we hear, and we understand that concern. That is not something that we take lightly. It's something we take very, very seriously, and it's something that I know each and every day that we implement this law, it's going to be in the forefront of our minds. The next division to talk about is our audits division. And Mr. Blackmer, who is certainly, I think, the best auditor in the state of Oregon, and I'll leave it to him to talk about comparisons nationally, but he is a great, great asset to our division. He's really one of the things that he has done. One of the nice things about auditors is they never stop improving. And even Gary, who's been at this for a very long time, he's come up with a new systematic approach to performance auditing. And one of the big things that he's doing is implementing what we're calling capstone audits. And a capstone audit seeks to tie together the discrete audits we do into a broader, more systematic picture. So we have, in education, for example, we have discrete audits on the GED system. We have discrete audits on childcare. We have discrete audits on the achievement gap. But the capstone audit tries to pull those all together so we can draw these bigger lessons about our education system so that decision makers like yourself can have that broader view. So that's an exciting thing that we're doing in audits now. And then the last is our elections division. And I'm very excited for this committee to get to meet Jim Williams, who is our elections director. Jim's got decades of experience over several different states. We are very lucky in Oregon to have Mr. Williams here. He's done a couple of things that I'll note right now over this past biennium. The first is a reorganization of his division to focus on the two discrete customer service sides of the house. The elections division has really two main functions. The first is serving voter services, those who are citizens who are voting. And then the second side of the house is candidates and campaigns, those who are running for office, trying to qualify things for the ballot. And so he has organized his shop around those two core functions. And he's done that very well, and it's been a fun process to watch. And then the second thing he's done is he provided over a relatively smooth election in 2014 that included the coordination of a statewide hand recount of 1.5 million ballots. If for no other reason, you might just thank Jim for helping navigate us through that process successfully. It's a big deal to have done that, and especially in your first statewide election in Oregon. So, as Jim says, there's always something new in elections, and Oregon kept that true for him this year. So the next slide, though, talks about our major challenges going into the next biennium. And I'll give you some notes here so you can think about it going forward over the next couple of days and a couple of months. We've tried to organize this also around some of our policy option packages. So for administrative services, the big challenge going forward is obtaining the necessary resources to fortify and secure our technology applications. And this is the discussion with this committee about the risks that are out there, how we would how we would address those risks.
And if you can finish your sentence, it's fine.
and that first bullet around administrative services and that challenge would be addressed by our policy package 100. So you'll see that when we talk about that.
Maybe it's going to come at a future time, but we're at 30,000 feet in these statements. I want to get down. I want to dig down deeper. What does it mean, obtaining the necessary resources? Are we talking money? Are we talking human capital? Are we talking a piece of software? What are we talking about?
For that one in package 100, we're talking about getting the money from this committee so we can go hire the human capital to help us do this.
But if I understand correctly, Mr. Taylor, your point right now is to give us that 30,000 feet, and you're going to be going through each of these in some detail, both now and in phase two. Is that correct?
That Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, that's correct. And Co-Chair Smith, the hope is right now what I'd like to do is with this slide identify the major challenges we have going forward, and then identify the policy option packages we have proposed to this committee.
I'll stay patient.
Okay.
We'll stay patient
all right.
Until we dig down deeper.
Okay.
But I would say, if I might, to the committee, knowing that Mr. Taylor and his colleagues are to some extent giving us that 30,000 view footprint that Coach Smith just alluded to, if there are specific things that you know you're going to have questions about coming up, I would encourage you, and I'm sure Mr. Taylor and his team would be receptive to you making a note of it now so that those who are coming to present can do it. I don't want to derail your presentation too much, Mr. Taylor, but I'm already thinking about a couple of things that I'd like to know about when you get to those sections. So if other committee members have that, I would encourage them to speak up, because I think that way we don't play catch-up when your folks are presenting on these various issues. And it may be that we'll be able to deal with more of them in phase two, but I just want to put that out there.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Smith, I'm happy to report this is my last slide.
That's impressive.
And then we'll be moving on to Mr. Mullen, who will get as deep as you want on the 10 IT positions. So administrative services, that's package 100. That's how we would propose to meet that challenge. The second bullet, archives, phase two compact shelving. So this is part two of Mary Beth's efforts around compact shelving. That's package 121. So you'll be hearing more about that. The corporation division, the big challenge going forward, as it has been in the past, is continuing to meet the growing customer demand for timely online business registrations. Customers demand it. We have to meet that. We have four packages around the corporation division, package 102, 360, 361, and 362. And Mr. Threlkeld will talk to you about those, but they're all designed to help meet the customer demand for online services. Audits, the big challenge we have in audits is finding and retaining sufficient personnel to handle all the necessary audit topics. And so we've got package 400. That's a package designed for three more auditors, and Mr. Blackmer can talk to you in detail about the need for that.
Madam Chair.
Certainly.
Is it a lack of funds, or is it the pay scale, or is it a lack of auditors walking the streets hunting for jobs?
It's a little bit... Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Senator Johnson, it's a combination of those things. I think in our audits division, the pay comparable to what folks might make in the metro area might be a little lower. You're also dealing with folks that a lot of folks live in Portland, so then they look for jobs in Portland, and there's that issue. The other thing though that I think happens in our audits division, and Gary and I have talked, Mr. Blackmer and I have talked a lot about this, is we get some of the best and the brightest people doing our audits and working in our audits division. And what happens when you have some of the best and the brightest people doing that job for not a lot of money, they will get recruited away. That happens. That's a fact of life. And we are trying to get as much good work out of them as possible while they're here, and we're lucky to have them.
Of course, sometimes we steal your best and brightest and give them less pay.
right.
Senator Whitson.
Mr. Taylor. Can I just, co-chairs, I do want to comment, though, that it is very common for people to take different jobs within different agencies, leaving the audits division. I mean, the pay is less. In the world of auditing, the state, I can't say for a fact, but I think our pay is the lowest for the jobs compared to the city of Portland Metro and Multnomah County. So there's that. And then there's you get lured away by the other agencies. So it does happen.
That's helpful information, Representative. Thank you. Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. Representative Taylor's comments were kind of on my along. Mr. Taylor, you say recruited away. Are these people recruited away by the private sector or by a higher paying public sector job? Could you give us some idea with that?
It varies. It varies. So we had one person recently go down to be the Lane County auditor, so that would be a public service. We had another person that worked right near me. He was going over doing audit work at the Oregon Treasury Department. They liked him so much, they hired him to do a job that's not an audit job, but more of an investment job. And then we've had folks go to Metro. So I think the recent group of people who have left have been more public sector than private sector.
Thank you.
Just as a heads up, Mr. Taylor, this is new information to me, and I appreciate Representative Taylor telling us this. I've just asked Mr. Bender to put down the list of things I want to talk about offline. I can't guarantee that we can do anything about it, but I think we ought to look at it because we are asking them. We do require first-class audit personnel to make sure that our agencies are fulfilling what they're supposed to fulfill and guarding the use of the taxpayer dollars wisely. And I'm concerned by what I'm hearing here. So, you know, we all make sacrifices to go into public service, but I'm not sure that we should say that working for the state should be a bigger sacrifice than working for Metro or the City of Portland. So that's useful information. Thank you.
And then the final bullet on this slide is our elections division. And there's two challenges going forward. The first is just budgeting and planning for the unpredictable nature of elections. We could not have predicted going into 2014 that we'd have a statewide hand recount of 1.5 million ballots. Some things happen in elections that you can't necessarily plan for or predict. And then the last is managing and maintaining our election information technology, and Mr. Williams will talk more about this, but we have two big IT systems in elections. One is ORSTAR, that is developed in-house. It has been added to over the years. It started out as two modules, now it's eight modules. It is the system that is in most need of attention. The other system is OCVR, that's our centralized voter registration system that is managed with an outside vendor, Hewlett-Packard, and that has been very stable and successful. So there's two different systems. You'll hear Mr. Williams talk about those. And then we've got package 200, 201, and 202 dealing with ORSTAR and OCVR.
Mr. Taylor, just quickly, and Mr. Williams, if you could make a note, I'd be interested to know if there are commercial off-the-shelf systems that do what ORSTAR does and whether the agency is considering at all at some point transitioning, and if so, do we have any idea of a ballpark of how much that would cost us, especially compared to the ongoing cost of maintaining ORSTAR, which isn't quite green screen, but I understand the challenges faced by it. So I'd be interested to hear a little bit more about that when we get to Mr. Williams' section. Thank you. I see him nodding in the back of the room.
Thank you, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Steiner Hayward. I would just like to make a comment about ORSTAR. I've been using it for 12 years, and I find it pretty easy to work with, so I don't know what that tells you about me. Yes. But besides that, when we call the Secretary of State's office, because I do this all internal, I don't hire somebody out, they are awesome at answering questions. And I want you and your staff to know the appreciation that I feel for that, because otherwise I would never feel secure enough to do this ourselves, that I would, at a pretty costly amount, would have to hire somebody.
Thank you. And I didn't mean to imply that I found it hard to use because I don't generally. But just that I understand the problem of when you grow something organically inside and have to maintain it as opposed to OCVR, which is externally maintained and supported. So thank you.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Representative Comp, thank you for that. We will pass that on. And that is something that our that the Elections Division has a good culture of customer service, and it's continuing under Mr. Williams. And then on your question about ORSTAR and whether there might be off-the-shelf solutions that can help, Package 202 is designed to try to address that question. And Mr. Williams can talk to you more about what process we have in place to try to get you an answer to that.
Thank you, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When Elections Division information is presented to us later, I hope that they will also have information available on how many elected officials or campaign treasurers they are providing information to. It's not just people running for the position, for example, in the state legislature, representatives and senators. There are hundreds and hundreds of positions in local government, special districts, all over the state. So I would be interested to see how many different people are depending on the services of this office.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Representative Nathanson, thank you. So we will look into that information. But you're right. You're absolutely right. It's not just legislators or statewide folks. It goes throughout government. With that, I would like to introduce Chris Mullen. He's our Information Systems Division Director. I will let Chris tell you about his background. But before I do that, I just want to say something personally about Chris. He is, you know, there have been a lot of questions asked about how can we have confidence in our division's ability to, our agency's ability to execute projects and strike the right balance. And for me, Chris Mullen is a big part of that answer. I think Chris has got the technological chops to help us get through some of the thorny issues. He's also, I think, got the personal integrity that if he tells you things are necessary to do the job, you can trust that. That's been my experience with Chris. Obviously, you don't know him from Adam, so you are free to, you know, put him to the test. Put him to the test today.
I think he just technically almost threw under the bus.
But Chris is, Mr. Mullen has really been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Has really been a pleasure to work with, and he's got all of my confidence. I'll tell you that right now.
Thank you. And Mr. Mullen, before you get started, could you just give us a sense that you guys may notice that unlike DAS, the Secretary of State's office has chosen to combine all of their presentation into one very long document, which is fine, but I just need to know how many more slides you have to get to because I need to be making sure I'm paying attention to the time, Mr. Mullen.
Thank you, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee. My name is Chris Mullen. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the Secretary of State. I don't have a whole lot. I believe I have six slides.
Great.
So I will. My slides will be brief.
And then we have corporations. Mr. Threlkell, you're coming up as well. And
yes.
How many are we talking about there?
34 slides is what we're hearing.
Okay. I'm not going to guarantee we're going to get through everything today. And we're going to have to pay attention. I think the questions that have been asked have been useful for laying the groundwork for our conversation over the next couple of days, but we do need to be mindful of time. Currently, you're only scheduled for 3 days, and I want to make sure that we sort of keep moving. And I'm guilty as anybody of asking a lot of questions today, so I'll follow my advice. Go for it.
Thank you. So I came to the Secretary of State 3 years ago as an operations manager after 21 years of military service, most of that with the Air Force, the last couple with Army logistics. And throughout my career, I've been responsible for classified, top secret, secret systems, security of those systems, management of those systems. I didn't see a whole lot of daylight, typically. They kept me buried 40 stories underground. So it's kind of nice to have some sunshine. And it's a big, scary world that we live in, right? And as Senator Johnson was pointing out earlier, there are large organizations that are spending millions of dollars in securing their systems, yet they get hacked. We had the White House on classified network that was hacked. We had the Department of Energy, Office of Personnel Management. We had Facebook, Sony Studios. Cyber incidents involving just government agencies alone jumped 35% from 2013 to 2014. The average cost, private and public sector, for a response to a breach was $12 million. That's the average to respond. 1.5 million cyber security victims per day worldwide. But probably the most telling and the most frightening to me is the last bullet. There were 583 companies surveyed. 90% said that their systems had been hacked in the last 12 months. So this is the world we live in. And in my time with the Secretary of State, I became the CIO 1 year ago, almost to the day. There's always been a focus on usability, performance, accessibility, features, enhancements. And while we did focus on security, we had firewalls in place. We did have policies in place. We did have some logging tools in place. The February breach in 2014, the February 2014 breach, has certainly renewed our energy with regards to security and fortifying our security posture. When I was appointed as the CIO, the first question that they asked me was, what are we going to do to prevent this from happening again? And while there are no guarantees and there is no crystal ball on what the future holds, and when you have state-level attacks coming out of North Korea, China, and the like, there are no guarantees, but this package puts us in the best possible position to prevent any future attacks from happening. Next slide. So this is kind of the breakout of the package and its purpose. Adding the position addresses our security assessments and some of those findings from those assessments. We had a third-party independent company that came in, did an assessment against our network, our infrastructure, and our applications. These positions address that. It also ensures the continuing of operations, sustainment, maintenance, and supporting our existing applications. And then thirdly, it's also looking to the future. I have a 13-year-old nephew. You go into his room, and it's like a NASA space station. He has electronics everywhere, and these are the people that are going to be voting, you know, 10 years from now. And we need to be prepared for that. We need to be looking towards mobile technologies, smartphone technologies, iPads, tablets. So part of our looking forward is making our applications render to those devices. We also need to address succession planning. We have a few employees who are nearing retirement. And there's also the risk mitigation of ensuring that we don't have single points of failure, where we have one person who happens to know one particular type of operating system. No one else knows it. And if that person wins the lottery, then we find ourselves in trouble. So we also, in this package, address that. And lastly, these positions eliminate some of our double fills and allows our infrastructure team the ability to upgrade our critical assets. Due to the fact that we did have some situations with regards to the security breach that we needed to address, we postponed buying hardware so that we could bring in some limited duration temp fills. And they are needed. They're needed to continue to answer these issues. And so we'd like to add those positions so that we can get rid of the double fills. This graphic kind of illustrates how.
Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. Mr. Mullen, if you've been double filling positions, then you must be robbing those positions from somebody else or within your do you visualize then, if you have these more positions, that you're double filling, that money will go back to the other part of the agency? Can you flesh that out a little bit for us?
Right. So co-chair Steiner Hayward, co-chair Smith, Senator Whitsitt, those positions we used out of our capital outlay, which is where we use some of our technology funds from, to be able to use, to be able to go out and find somebody that can fill that position. So we're not taking them from another division. We're bringing them in from other agencies or from the private sector to come in on a limited duration basis. So, for example, we brought someone in to do business analyst work for the elections division. We put them on a one-year limited duration position. But that position is a position we need to be able to sustain that application. So we'd like to make that, get the position authority for that particular position.
So the money came from the capital expenditure.
Right.
And so please tell me that was current revenue, not borrowed revenue?
Correct.
Thank you.
Correct.
All right.
And just to follow on, and so that means that there's money that we could be spending on technology, upgrading some of our hardware that we can't because we're using that money to pay for a body.
Great, thanks.
So this chart shows how ISD is the engine that drives the business. Each of the divisions in the larger circles around us have unique applications that are built. And Senator Steiner Hayward, to your question earlier about the ratio of, you know, 1-5 or 1-4, we're not just supporting the internal Secretary of Staff, Secretary of State staff. We support the millions of Oregonians who are using our systems. We have people that are in-house building customized applications. We also are answering to web when they can't get to our web pages. We have staff that are answering to that. There's testing to make sure that those applications render appropriately. And so we're not just going out and troubleshooting computers or troubleshooting servers. We're dealing with a lot of the public-facing applications as well.
That's helpful. Thank you, Mr. Mullen.
Mm-hmm. So again, these larger charts show the different applications that are running in the divisions. And I also wanted to point out with regards to outsourcing, that was an earlier conversation, there are elements of our operation that we do outsource. As Mr. Taylor pointed out earlier, OCVR is the infrastructure and the application development of that is outsourced. We also use hosting services at Shavs or Synergy that host some of our applications. We also have software as a service. I'm not sure if everybody's familiar with that, but we have our email sitting out in the cloud where some vendor is providing our email services for us. We don't have that in-house. So we do certainly look at the business cases around what services can we outsource. With regards to DAS services, I will certainly be a part of that conversation going forward about utility services, as Alex Pettit has mentioned. To see if there are any of those things that we can also fit into place.
Great.
So,
I'm sorry. I just think Senator Johnson has a quick question.
I've gotten a little lost in all the acronyms, but you said something, if I understood you correctly, that people are hosting some, companies are hosting some of our services. Does that mean they physically have equipment, or we're licensees under software, or it's a fee for contract? How is that working?
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, there's a mixed bag. Some of them, yes, the hardware is sitting at their place. We have non-disclosure agreements with those particular vendors to ensure that our data is being protected appropriately, that it's not being used for anything other than its intended purposes. We also requested they do security assessments against those. We do go into contract with those vendors we'll go out for a bid to get find best value for those things, and then we sign a contract, sometimes 1 year to try it out, sometimes three with several 1 year extensions on top of that.
Follow up, Madam Chair. A couple of things occur to me. One of them is, who does your contracts? Because we have had a vivid example of what insufficient contracting has done with respect to Cover Oregon. And the second question is, if a dispute arises and our physical assets are in the custody of someone else, Does the contract speak to being able to retrieve those, or would we have to litigate to get them?
Co-chairs, Senator Johnson, I think I bring a unique perspective on that. After I got out of the military, I was a vendor myself for about 14 years, and so I certainly have I certainly appreciate vendor support, but I know that there's risks that can be associated with those. And one is contracts themselves and whether or not they're written appropriately to make sure that the terms and conditions are written appropriately. Our contracts, for the most part, the ones that are internal, are done within our agency by the Business Services Division, Mr. Morgan and his staff. We have participated in state-level contracts where there's already an agreement in place, and then we utilize those services again. So it really depends. But I have certainly paid very, very close attention to our contracts when they go through, our work orders go through. And I think your point is very, very valid, that if they're not written appropriately, that we can be at greater risk.
So to clarify, the Secretary of State's office hasn't really undergone any major new IT projects since you came on board, though, right? You're just dealing with what we've already got and trying to make sure it's working well. You haven't done anything really huge. You've done a revamp of the business registry. The reason I'm asking is because what I don't know is whether the offices of constitutional officers are required to go through the same stage gate process through the Chief Information Officer of the state, through Mr. Pettit's office, as regular executive branch agencies are. Are you?
Senator Steiner-Hayward, I saw there was a bill recently that came out on that, and I was reading a little bit about that. We do have our own governance in place to make sure that the way that we're doing our system development life cycle does have those stage gates included. And I can certainly provide you at a later point some of that documentation on the governance, how we build our business cases, and how we do our application development.
I'd appreciate that. And because I am a little versed in IT, enough to ask questions, but not enough to necessarily know the difference, I would appreciate if you could compare it to what the process is for other agencies as they think about it, given the parameters that have been put in place through Mr. Pettit's office currently. That'd be very helpful to me, Mr. Mullen. Thank you. And to the rest of the committee. Thanks.
Okay, continuing on, most of these applications that we're talking about are customized programs, built, meaning they're built in-house. But we do have these outsourced applications, and we also use some applications that do come out of a box. For example, under audits, you'll see Teammate, that comes out of a box. On our network, and I think this is particularly interesting to every agency, we did a network scan. We had over 900 unique types of software on our network. And so this chart is to demonstrate those applications, but the ones that we mentioned here are just the publicly facing applications, the large scale ones. All right, next chart. This shows our project load currently. In the far left-hand column, you'll see the different divisions. The middle column shows our currently active projects. That's why I really appreciate the question about what size projects and how many of them are bigger than a bread box. On the far right side, we put examples of some of those projects, everything from infrastructure upgrades to web presence improvements, online fee payment. We do have some Aurastar projects going on. Strategic-wise, our biggest project this year was the Oregon Business Registry that you mentioned. That was a big project.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At some point, I would expect that a list of ongoing projects might be renamed just ongoing activities. Because if you are engaged in continuous improvement, you're always doing bug fixes, you're always doing upgrades to make sure that interfaces with a half a dozen or more browsers that people are using are compatible with your product. You're adding features that people like. Some of what I see here, I would be surprised if you made a report like this every 6 months, if much of that wouldn't always be on the report forever.
Thank you, co-chairs, Representative Nathanson. So appendix or attachment F, one of the things that the LFO asked us for was a list of the specific projects to list out. And I removed all the maintenance, sustainment, bug fix type of stuff and just kept it to feature level type of larger projects. And I think there were about 108 projects just of that magnitude. So yeah, ongoing any day, there are always those little fix type things that we do, sustainment and maintenance.
Brief follow-up,
please.
For example, web presence improvements. I would be surprised if you didn't always have a list of things people want and just keep cycling through to always be willing to do some new web presence improvements or application upgrades. My point really is just that I would expect the need for this kind of work and the staffing to support it is ongoing, and it will not decrease. Just because you finish one thing on there, you're going to be doing it again next year.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and this is the chart that Mr. Taylor referred to earlier that shows the FTEs. This bar graph shows each division along the bottom of the line, the two bienniums and the deltas between them. The darker purples are the business-specific staffing. The lighter purple are the IT-specific staffing, and the 10 the 10 increases are captured by the deltas there. So when you see, for example, under elections 15, 17, you'll see 21. Those are election specific staff, then 8 ISD staff. So if you were to add those two together, that's would give you kind of the picture of how many elections people are supporting that. But 8 of them are specifically ISD. The takeaway from this chart really is that, as Mr. Taylor pointed out earlier, while the positions are housed in ISD due to their classifications, in other words, a project manager by HR rules it falls under the ISD or the IT umbrella. Same with information security specialists or ISSs. Those have to be managed by IT divisions. But they're providing support across the divisions, as I mentioned earlier, like the business analyst for elections. That particular FTE is supporting the elections division only, helping build that application. Okay, next slide. And this is the final IT slide. We have the 10 specific positions listed in rank of priority. Our LFO during budget preparation asked us to provide not only a prioritized list, but the risk assessment of each of those positions. Prioritizing for me was a particularly arduous task because as we came across each risk was determined to be not acceptable. And so each of these positions were designed to address those specific risks and the specific needs of the agency. So with that, and I leave this to you folks, we can go through attachment G, which talks about each of those positions, the needs and the risks, but we have provided that document to you for your review.
Yeah, I think we're going to hold off on that at the moment, Mr. Mullen. Okay. I appreciate your bringing that to attention. I would expect that we would come back to this in phase two when we go into your policy option packages in a little bit more detail. Is that correct, Mr. Bender?
Correct.
Chair Smith? So let's hang tight. We know to take a look at attachment G, and when we get back to phase two, we'll be expecting to dive a little bit more deeply into all of your agency's policy option packages. Okay? Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Bender, could you remind us of the schedule for the next 2 days? And Mr. Taylor, could you stay put for a sec? I just want to think about finding so that we figure out how best to handle this so Mr. Threlkeld doesn't have a significantly interrupted presentation.
Madam Co-Chair and committee members, this agency is scheduled for two additional days before you, and the information that they sent to me, they had planned to get into the Corporation Division today. They also were showing some time for Corporation to continue tomorrow and then to get through the with audits and archives. I believe that on the last day there would be Elections Division, then discussion of information, Administrative Services Division, plus of course time for any public testimony.
Okay, well then if Mr. Threlkeld planned to pour over onto tomorrow anyway, then I don't think it matters how much, so we might as well get started and not waste the time. Since we have at least 15 minutes to allow you to get started, Mr. Threlkeld. Thank you for your patience. I just want to make sure that we're, you know, using everybody's time wisely. Please
okay.
Be my guest.
Co-chairs Steiner, Hayward, and Smith. My name is Peter Threlkeld. I'm the director of the Corporation Division for the Secretary of State's office. The Corporation Division is where you come to start a business, become a notary, or to file a lien against personal property. We provide information to support businesses and ensure that registration processes are as fast, simple, and easy as possible. We also help small business when they run into problems with state government. We are funded by user fees that are paid by businesses to do transactions with us, and we anticipate in the next biennium we will transfer over $52 million to the state general fund. Our programs allow you to know whom you're doing business with, that documents are authentic, and if an asset has been pledged as collateral. As the first stop for business, we provide information on government's requirements for starting and operating a business as well as hiring employees. Our new Office of Small Business Assistance helps small business to cut through government red tape. Last year, we relocated our call center operation out of the Oregon State Correctional Institution where we had been for 20 years. As more of our computer systems have moved online, this has limited the ability of the inmate operators to be able to provide assistance and answer questions for our business customers. Bringing that back in-house, we were able to train our staff, develop more cross-training, provide better quality service, and more consistent answers to our customers. We realigned our operations to support this change.
I'm going to have you hang tight for 1 second. Senator Johnson.
So does anything that you do right now go through the prison system?
Co-chairs, Senator Johnson, no. We have pulled out of the prison system.
Is DMV still using any prison functions?
Yes.
When we left, they were still located in the prisons.
As of about 6 weeks ago, which was the last time I visited Coffee Creek, maybe 2 months ago, they were also. They were just for call center stuff, for navigation of the system, not with access to people's individual records, to the best of my understanding. More like, how do I do this?
Just, I would observe an interesting vulnerability in terms of computers.
Thank you.
Okay. We realigned our operations to support the change, eliminating a manager position so that we could focus more staff on frontline customer service. Our staff rotate weekly between filing documents, whether in person or in the office, as well as serving customers both on the phone and at our counter in person. Our other services provide a wealth of information to start a business, including publications on how to start a business or hire employees, the State License Directory, and the Business Express one-stop business portal. The Business Express is our award-winning one-stop business portal where entrepreneurs can find all of the state's resources and requirements for business in one easy-to-use website. Extensive customer review and usability testing were used in the development that led to the customer task-oriented site and eliminated agency jargon. We are building...
Senator Johnson,
I think this document, and I know that I'm sort of mixing and matching here, but my curiosity was initially triggered by this. To what degree, as you're doing ostensibly case management for some of these folks, do you maintain any contact with the legislators from whose district the question emanates? I mean, if you're, I don't know if you've got, you alluded to the fact that you've got counter people giving advice. So if one of my constituents comes in and says, I want to start a car repair, and you ostensibly do the case management and you figure out what all he needs and gets over all the hurdles, is there any attempt to close the loop with legislators who might be working on the same issue? What I'm trying to get at is the redundancy, how many people you can send out to work on the same problem.
Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, with regards to general questions that come into the Corporation Division, that's not tracked and relayed back to legislators, although the report that you're alluding to is our Office of Small Business Assistance annual report, and there is feedback in that process. When we receive legislator referrals, we do loop back and make sure that the legislators and their staff.
I think that's quite the question.
I can ask my own question.
Yes.
That isn't the question I'm asking. And I would like to at least tee up folks in the audience who are going to speak to this question about if the inquiry is a self-starter, how does the loop get closed with the legislator? And that's not your issue, and Ms. Miles is shaking her head, so she knows what my query is, and I'll just wait to hear her presentation.
Okay.
Thank you. You're off the hook.
All right. I appreciate that. Okay. So with the Business Express, one of the things that we're doing is we're building upon the success of that application as we are upgrading the Oregon License Directory system. This is a comprehensive directory of over 1,400 licenses, permits, and registrations from both state and local governments, and it makes easy access to government requirements for both businesses and citizens. The tool is over 12 years old. It currently is on an unsupported operating system, and we're in the process of upgrading that as part of Package 172 from the current biennium's budget.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I was going to hold my comments. Colleagues, I'd share with you really quick. I work on a regular basis with the Corporate Division through the Small Business Development Center, through multiple programs that our little company manages, and it's first rate. It is first rate what the Secretary of State has created. My question is, and I guess it's more of a comment, if there's going to be an upgrade of this system, I sure hope there's going to be outreach to your customers, because it's working well right now, and I would hate to have us fix something that many of us perceive as not broken and working very, very well.
Co-Chair Smith, thank you for the compliment. Yes, as part of the redesign of this application, we're bringing it to a supported operating system. We've been doing usability testing. We're working with the groups that use the system, that enter data into the system. We want to make sure that it continues to work for everybody, and that this part of the application delivers on those promises.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Can we go back a couple slides? We're almost out of time, so I wanted to get my thoughts in before we lose the day. Can we go two slides back? Right there, on bullet number two on how to start a business in Oregon, that is the Bible of how to start a business in Oregon, and it is excellent. It is phenomenal, but I have one critique. You can only get it online now. And I know there's an effort to save money, and I know that, but there's a lot of folks who are looking to start a small business who, for one reason or another, don't have that level of sophistication to utilize that. And it would be great if this body working through you could figure out how to find just a few nickels and dimes to create a few of those in paper version to give to those customers who, for one reason or another, can't access it through the computer.
Senator Johnson?
Let me just follow up. How then would they have to get that paperwork? Would they, it could Here's be faxed, or they would have to come in and pick it up?
Let me share with you what I do. At my small business development center, I download 100 of them, and we bind them ourselves and give them out.
Commissioner Smith, Senator Johnson, this was something that we used to print on a regular basis. Printing costs for a publication of about 60 pages is about $1 per publication. Mailing costs were a little bit closer to $4 per publication just because of the size of the document when we mailed it out. We do currently, if requested, we will print and are happy to print out one. It just doesn't come in that nice bound up volume that we used to have.
And again, in the interest of time, perhaps we could have a future conversation about a win-win solution that could work for everyone on that.
We would be happy to do that.
Thank you. See if we can get in one more before we have to quit.
Okay. And I think one more. Okay. So as we were working with the vendor for our license directory, a new license directory, we were able to negotiate a software as a service model where the vendor will build and host the application for us, and they do not charge us any fees or any costs up front. So they're bearing that full risk for us. Once the system is up and running, we will pay a subscription fee on an annual basis. One of the things that that allows us to do, we're going to be able to use this system for over 10 years before we actually hit that break-even cost. So we think that this is a great utilization, great use of state resources and the funding that we have available. This is part of Package 163. Instead of doing that capital cost, we're asking to have a smaller increase to our base budget to allow us to continue with that, make those payments out over time. The vendor assumes all the risks for building, supporting, maintaining, and hosting the system. The trade-off for them is they get to take this system and offer it out to other states and have those states pay into the system that they've invested in and built. But we think this is a great opportunity, a great deal for Oregon.
Great.
Okay. Are we out of time, or?
I think we're pretty much out of time, unless you've got something you can do in 35 seconds. Any other questions before we close for the day, colleagues? Coacher Smith.
Thank you, Madam Coacher. I just want to give one last comment. Earlier, I was mentioning the good work being done with some of these pieces, but I think tomorrow we're going to hear from our small business ombudsman, and we're going to hear about the good work going on there, and I think there's some real success stories to share. I also want to point out that whoever the folks are, and I don't know who they are, but whoever's doing the business registry and the uniform commercial code work, they're doing excellent. And so I'm nervous when I hear about this because it's a good thing and it's working really well. And so, Madam Coacher, I'm really going to have to be convinced that this is going to maintain, we're going to maintain that excellent service, and that we're not going to disrupt something that's working very, very well.
Coacher Smith, just one final comment. The application that we're working on, the business or the license directory, is the same vendor that built the Business Express business portal for us. That's NIC USA, the state's e-government commerce provider. The people that provide the Oregon Business Registry, our UCC system, Uniform Commercial Code system, those are maintained in-house by the staff that Mr. Mullen spoke about, and those are our internal resources that support and build and maintain that for us. So two different groups that specialize in different areas. We think that that's the best of both worlds.
You're doing good stuff.
Great. Thank you so much. All right. I think that we will close the public hearing for today, and we're adjourned. All right. I think that we will close the public hearing.